I want to thank all of you who braved the elements to come out this evening. And it's good to be with God's people and whatever it takes to be able to do that. Even fighting the elements is a good thing for us. I want to talk tonight about a passage that has to do with the role of women. And if there's any topic that's a hot button topic, it's the role of women. What can they do, especially in regards to spiritual activities, and what should they not do? It seems in my experience I've seen two extremes among brethren who believe the Scriptures. One extreme almost takes away any responsibility or any right of the woman to teach or help other people in any way. I remember a brother in Kentucky who quoted a text that's often dealt with along this line, and that is 1 Timothy 2:12. This is the way he would quote the text. He would say, "I do not allow a woman to teach, period." That's the way he would quote it. And of course, those of you who know the text know that's not the way it reads. You have to read the whole text. And of course, Paul says in that text, "I do not allow a woman to teach or exercise authority over a man." So we're not talking in this text about teaching other women or teaching other children. But there are some extremes out there that say that in no circumstance can a woman teach in any way. But I believe the other extreme is one that I had to deal with a few years ago. Was some brethren in New York City, in Manhattan, in the Manhattan Church of Christ. The point of view that expressed by those brethren was that there's really no difference in the roles between men and women in the Bible. The restrictions, such we've just mentioned here, 1 Timothy 2:12, have to do, according to these brethren, with violently taking authority from men, or perhaps from some customs that existed there. And the same approach is taken regarding other texts along that line, 1 Corinthians 14:34 and 35. The idea is these are just traditions and customs of the first century. It's out of place for us to apply what was written in regards to those today. Of course, the problem with that is in all these passages in the New Testament which talk about some restrictions on the role of the women, usually either before or afterward, they talk about creation. Creation as being the basis for the restriction. I want us to study an Old Testament example that contradicts both of these extremes. But first of all, we need to make a very important point. And that is that the New Testament regulations about the role of women are said to be the same as the Old Testament regulations. You remember in 1 Corinthians chapter 14, verse 34, Paul said, "The women are to keep silent in the churches, for they are not permitted to speak, but are subject themselves, just as the law also said." Just as the law also says. Are we talking here about something new that Paul is coming up with? This is a principle that has existed since creation. Therefore, we can go to the Old Testament and see examples of godly women in the Old Testament. And if they were approved by God under the same regulations we have today, we know that they can be a good example for us today. And they can shed light on how we apply the restrictions that are found in the New Testament. Well, that's kind of a lengthy introduction. Hopefully, I haven't bored you with it. But it sets the stage for a very exciting topic, and I want to talk about Deborah. And if you have your Bibles, turn to Judges chapters 4 and 5. That's where the story of Deborah is found. And I want to see exactly how Deborah served God and what we can learn about the role of women by her actions in the Scriptures. Of course, in the period of the Judges, we're talking about a time maybe about 1,200 years before Christ. Israel was weak, though some served Jehovah. So many of the Israelites mixed up their idolatry with the true religion of Christ. And God raised up judges like Deborah to help the children of Israel in this time. In this study tonight, I want to look at four qualities that made Deborah a special leader as a woman and make applications to us today. What can we learn about Deborah? Well, we can learn about the situation that faced her, the oppression, in Judges chapter 4, verses 1 through 3. Judges 4, 1 through 3. Then the sons of Israel again did evil in the sight of the Lord after Ehud had died, and the Lord sold them into the hand of Jabin, king of Canaan, who reigned in Hazor, and was the commander of his army, was Sisera, who lived in Harosheth Hagoyim. You can practice that one a little bit at home. Verse 3, the sons of Israel cried to the Lord, for he had 900 iron chariots, and he oppressed the sons of Israel severely for 20 years. So the oppressor was Jabin, who reigned in Hazor, or Hatzor, as some people say. That's a very interesting spot. You may notice it. I seem like I saw a laser pointer right there. Just north of the Sea of Galilee, and has some of the most interesting ruins in the land of Israel. There is the mound upon which the city was built, inhabited for many different periods of time in the ancient history of Israel. And some of the ruins, not super high resolution. They found there some gates that some people ascribe to Solomon. But of course, that would have been after this period in the time of the judges. So as the king of this city oppresses the children of Israel, who did God raise up to help them when they cried to him? Let's go to verses 4 and 5. Now Deborah, a prophetess, the wife of Lapidoth, was judging Israel at that time. She used to sit under the palm tree of Deborah between Ramah and Bethel in the hill country of Ephraim, and the sons of Israel came up to her for judgment. Now notice some interesting things about Deborah according to this passage. A wise woman. Now in her judging of the children of Israel, she did not go out in the cities and towns to do her judging. Instead, she sat underneath a palm tree that was evidently close to her home, and the people came to her. Some have suggested that that way she would be able to take care of her family, and she identified, as we're going to see later on, with her family. She did not identify herself in her great song as a great warrior leader, but rather, in chapter 5 and verse 7, she said, a mother in Israel. That was interesting. An interesting way for her to identify herself. You know, there have always been wise women like Deborah among God's people. In the Old Testament, you can think of examples like Sarah, Hannah, Huldah, another interesting study. In the New Testament, you can think of Mary, Elizabeth, Anna, Mary Magdalene, the women who served Jesus, Priscilla, Lydia. The Bible is full of wise women like Deborah. And I've only been here a couple of days, but I've seen some wise women here and heard of some wise women in this congregation. Where I attend the congregations, I work with several, but each one of the congregations I work in has some very wise women. I enjoy getting Bible points from them. Sometimes women are especially effective in helping those who are overtaken in faults. Galatians chapter 6 and verse 1. The texts that tell Christians to correct others and help others are written to women just as much as to men. But here is where we see a great tragedy sometimes among God's people. Some men do not want to accept advice or help from women. I can speak boldly here since my wife is several hundred miles away. But seriously, some men don't want to accept it. I am the head of the wife, they say. Well, you know, the man is the head in the family, but what head does not listen to his body and the messages that come from his body? And even in local congregations, and especially since I deal a lot with congregations made up of people from Latin America, you have what they say in Spanish, machismo, macho guy. The man is in control. And sometimes even in American churches, our churches composed of those of our North American culture, we hear, I'm not going to let any woman tell me anything. And that sometimes happens, especially when some godly woman is trying to encourage us to do something that we know we ought to do, but maybe just don't have the spiritual fortitude to do it. Instead of listening to the advice and taking it to heart, sometimes that old macho comes back into men. They don't want to do it, and they dig that out as an excuse not to pay attention to the Deborahs that we have among us. But we can thank God that the children of Israel were not that way. They saw in Deborah a woman of wisdom and were willing to go to her from all over to that palm tree where she sat dispensing her wisdom. And that willingness to listen to a godly woman is what God used to save them in this time. Deborah was a wise woman, but she was also a discreet woman, even a submissive woman. Do the actions of Deborah justify women preachers in the pulpit today, or women taking positions of authority in the church today? Her example is often used that way, and she's one that's often brought up by those who would justify that type of a role for her. But when they do, they don't look closely at how she carried out her role. As she sat under her palm tree, she would not have been taking a position of dominant or assertive authority over the man. She didn't give rousing discourses to hundreds or thousands of people. They simply approached her under that palm tree for the quiet wisdom that she dispensed. And an important point which helps us see this discretion and this submission is what happened when it came time to raise an army to go and fight the enemy. What did Deborah do when the time came to fight the enemy? Look at verses 6 and 7. Now she sent and summoned Barak, the son of Abinoam from Kadesh Naphtali, and said to him, Behold, the Lord, the God of Israel, has commanded, go and march to Mount Tabor and take with you 10,000 men from the sons of Naphtali and from the sons of Zebulun. I will draw out to you Sisera, the commander of Jabin's army, with his chariots and as many troops to the river Kishon, and I will give him into your hand. When the time came to raise an army and lead it, what did God have Deborah do? Did he want her to do that job herself? You notice he wanted her to go and choose a man, Barak, to do that. Now the moral authority for this project did come from Deborah. But the assertive, authoritative type of leadership, that's what God went and chose a man to do it. Now, that's what wise women do today. They give, they know their role, they dispense wisdom, they help others. But when the time comes for that assertive type of authority, they know that's not an area that God desires them to get into, from the verses we've mentioned briefly in the introduction. That's a hard lesson for many women today. They want to be in charge of men. They want to order them around. And I don't have to tell you that the type of woman that is admired today is not usually the quiet, feminine, motherly type. What type of a woman is usually used as a role model today? Well, I missed one in my picture, but there's one. These are the popular type of people. Quiet, feminine? No, these are the brash, military type that God doesn't have this role in mind for women. And what has this type of aggressive, pushy approach gained? What does it gain for men? Through the years, men have gotten into trouble by trying to be pushy, by trying to be violent, by trying to take charge where it wasn't their place. And it has been women who have civilized them, saying, no, if you want to have a good home and family life, you must come home, take care of the kids, help around the house. We hate to admit that, men, but we need that, don't we? It's been women who've been the civilizers. And when women abandon that role and become deceived in the same way that men have through the centuries, thinking that their happiness, their fulfillment can come by being in charge and by ordering people around, that's one of the reasons why we have so many problems in our society today, isn't it? Where does pure strength come from? Where does real spiritual and godly strength come from? For men as well as women. The wisdom from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, reasonable, full of mercy and good fruits, unwavering, without hypocrisy. Of course, this verse wasn't written just to women. It's written to men as well. It's men who've been so tempted to get away from that, and women who have helped them with that. And now, what's happening? The women are leaving that exalted role of civilizer of our society. Let's continue on a little bit more about Deborah. She was a wise woman, a discreet woman. She was a victorious woman. Now, we've read in verses 6 and 7, God's command through Deborah for Barak to go and get up an army and lead it against the enemy. How did Barak respond to that charge? Did he respond this way? Barak said to her, if you will promise to stay out of everything and not make any suggestions, then I will go. Is that the way verse 8 reads? How does it read? Barak said to her, if you will go with me, then I will go. But if you will not go with me, I will not go. Today, I don't dare do anything of great importance without consulting first with wise women, with my wife, with my mother, with others in the congregation. I need their advice and their counsel. Barak realized that he needed to hear. And as a congregation, this congregation should not do anything without first consulting the wise women here. I do believe the final decision, according to the rule of the Scriptures, is in the hands of the men. But what congregation is going to do anything without first consulting the Deborahs in their midst? But when Barak accepted, the inspired prophetess Deborah said, now is the time for the battle. And we'll go through it briefly. The key areas in the battle were Mount Tabor and the valley of the brook Kishon. There's Mount Tabor. Evidently, I've never been there, but from the pictures, a very distinctive type of mountain, kind of rounded there. Nothing like Lookout Mountain or any of the places that are long ridges. Another view. Incidentally, there's a monastery on top of it now. You see the road zigzagging to the top of it. And there's, after the rain, Mount Tabor. There is during a period of dry spell, but the area in front of it is an area where the brook Kishon goes, and that's where the battle was held. And if we want to do the mount, the map is the best map I could find. The only thing that's aggravating about this map is north is to the left. And, you know, I do not like any map where north is not straight up. But anyway, north is to the left. So you have the forces gathering together. You have the children of Israel gathering on Mount Tabor. If you read the story, it says in verse 7 that God, no, not verse 7, in verses 10 through 12, that the Israelites rallied 10,000 men on that Mount Tabor. And then you have the enemy coming from Hazor and Harosheth Hagoyim, and they meet with their chariots at the foot of Mount Tabor there where the little Kishon River flows, and that's where there was a great battle. Verse 15 says, the Lord routed Sisera and all his chariots and all his army with the edge of the sword before Barak. And Sisera alighted from his chariot and fled away on foot. But Barak pursued the chariots and the armies as far as Harosheth Hagoyim, and the army of Sisera fell by the edge of the sword. Not even one was left. And the passage in the ancient victory psalm in chapter 5 gives a few more details. Verse 21 says, the torrent of Kishon swept them away, the ancient torrent, the torrent Kishon. Evidently, God caused the brook to overflow and to flood the land around about. And what good are chariots in a flooded plain? They're no good at all. So you have the battle and the forces fleeing. But that's not the end of the story. This is the part of the story that gets a little bit rough. Somebody said sometimes the Bible is a little bit strong. Somebody said this is PG-13 through here. It's violent, but there is violence in the scriptures. Jabin fled. And exhausted, he sought refuge in the tent of Heber the Kenite. Most of us know the story. The Kenites were allied with Israel from the time of Moses, and eventually they were just absorbed by Israel. But Heber's wife, Jael, drove a stake through his head. This is the general, while he was asleep. So in this battle, who received the glory? No macho man received any glory. Instead, a woman, and several women, you might say, were the ones who God used for the victory over the enemy. You know, women who today follow the example of Deborah will be victorious today. Who are really victorious, spiritually speaking? Those who say nothing in the face of evil. I see nothing. Don't want to get involved. I don't think that's what God wants of godly women. But on the other end, is the victory of those who try to take over and be in charge and order everyone around? That's not the root either. Godly women who are victorious today are those who are like Deborah. They quietly and submissively speak up in the face of evil and apostasy. But they refuse to get into that boisterous, I'm in charge, do as I say mode. And that firm but submissive spirit, that's what makes godly women victorious today. Deborah is a great example of that. That's an example from someone that a godly woman I know in New Jersey. Her husband, her name is Miriam. Her husband was not a Christian. And it's a tough situation when you're in a home where one is a Christian and the other isn't. And she tried the threats. If you don't obey Jesus, if you don't obey the gospel, you're going to be lost. And that didn't work. She tried the tears of sorrow. Won't you please obey Jesus? Please obey the gospel. That didn't work. One day someone read to her 1 Peter chapter 3, verses 1 and 2, about women gaining their husbands without a word by their behavior. So she decided she was going to be firm, go to services, and serve the Lord in spite of her husband's objections, but not say anything. Let her example do the work. After about 2 years, he didn't know exactly how to accept that at first, but after about 2 years, he said, could I attend services with you? Yes. But still, she kept herself restrained. After about 3 or 4 years, he decided he wanted to obey the gospel. He's now a strong Christian, one of the strong Christians in the congregation of Piscataway, New Jersey. Well, what worked for her? The strong complaining, the strong points, the syllogisms. You've got to do this, that, and the other. What worked for her was that quietness but firmness that we see in Deborah. That's what works today. But there's one more point before we close. Deborah, wise woman, discreet woman, a victorious woman, but she was a woman who preferred to give credit to other people. And we get that mainly from that Psalm of Thanksgiving in chapter 5. And if you stop and read that psalm, it's ancient Hebrew poetry. Those people who read Hebrew say that it's some of the oldest Hebrew that they know of. And it's very difficult sometimes to translate. And yet the message comes through. Deborah in the psalm gives credit. But to whom? Of course, Jehovah receives credit above all others. The men who were willing to fight are given credit. Barak. But who especially gets credit is Jael. And I wonder if that's to make some of those macho men jealous there. But as you read through Judges, she doesn't say a lot about herself. There are a few references to herself, but mainly she's just mentioned there as a mother in Israel. She chose to give most of the credit to others. That's a lesson that's difficult for a lot of people today. There's so many people that you see, and sometimes you even see it in yourself, that life just revolves around themselves. Everything is about me. And it seems like we can see that in others. And sometimes it's difficult to see it in ourselves. One time at a funeral of a faithful gospel preacher, someone else was invited to say a few words. And as the other brother talked, it was just all about him. I met the dearly departed brother. When I worked with him here, he said I was a good preacher. And my next opportunity with him, I thought, and the words I and my and me just popping out continually, almost like the letter of Claudius Lysias there in the book of Acts. It's so easy to get in that mode. It's all about me and what I've done. But Deborah and all who try to be poor in spirit fight this tendency to be victorious in God's kingdom. We've got to learn it's not all about us. It's not all about me. It's about serving God and encouraging others to do the same. If God grants us the privilege of being part of any spiritual victories, may remember that the glory is God's. And encourage other people. Let's build them up along the same line. But it's not all about us. Well, do you want to be victorious? And I hope this 3,000-year-old lesson from a godly woman will help you. What are some, in summary, what are some things we can learn from this? We can learn the importance of listening to godly women. We can learn the importance of leading submissively. The best leaders, both men and women, are submissive and humble in their leadership. We can learn to always give credit to other people, focus on others, but primarily to give glory to God. There are two types of lives out there. There are those out there who are givers and those who are out there who are takers. Selfish takers are concerned with getting things done their way, my way or the highway. What about my wants? What about me? What about my rights? That's what our world is getting so swallowed up in. Or there are those who live giving lives like Deborah, giving lives of service to God and service to other people. Which type of life do you want? Only by knowing God, by following His Word, can you learn what it's really like to be a giver, to imitate Jesus Christ, and by giving yourself up to find yourself, as Jesus said. Do you want to change your life? You want to live for God? Follow Jesus. He will help you to do that. Jesus said, "He that believes and is baptized shall be saved." Somebody tonight would like to do that, we'd be glad to help you. If we can help anyone else in any other way, with prayers or with Bible studies, you choose the way you let us know, we'd be glad to help you in any way we can. Let's stand now and sing the invitation song.